Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2010. Lecture 8, delivered on September 20, 2010. The title of this lecture is Analysis of Financial Statements.
Today, Analysis of Financial Statements. I am passing around the room the income statement and balance sheet for Apple Inc. And we will use that in live fire exercise so that you can actually get some hands-on practice using the financial ratios, getting them, and then we'll have a chance to talk about how you analyze them. Now, I point out that the analysis will be summary at this point, certainly, but I want you to go beyond just the numbers and do what we do in finance, which is analyze what it is we have calculated. Were we just to do the calculations, we would certainly qualify as a lesser kind. Perhaps accountant. Before I do that, though, I am going to show you something that I brought up the last time, and I got an awful lot of blank looks, which I oftentimes do. I asked the teachers in other classes, well, in accounting and other places, business courses, well, have you taught your students about what we call gains to leverage, or what leverage really means in practical terms? And I get kind of, well, yeah, I kind of mentioned it, or no, that's not in the scope of our curriculum in this class. And so that explains why I get kind of this blank look about the idea of gains to leverage. Now, before I begin, have any of you heard or do you know what I mean by gains to leverage, technically speaking? Oh, okay. Let me show you something. And I'll need it. Let me get my calculator before I start here so that I'm not going to try to do this on my own. You have finally achieved your dream, sir. You are going to buy yourself that house trailer that you wanted. It's a double wide because you're going to marry a double wide lady. Indeed, you are going to decorate this in all of the latest velvet paintings, Elvis, and those kinds of paintings. And you are going to decorate the front yard. And you are going to have to, as you figure it, invest $100,000 in this house. Now, you hear about this and you say, I want to live the dream too. So you each prepare to buy a house trailer in one of the finer parts of town on Market Street. But what, you have different philosophies about life, about investing, and about what constitutes being prudent as a consumer and as an investor. So the house is going to cost $100,000. It's going to be $100,000 for each of you. Now, you, sir, are the kind of person who believes that you should never a borrower or a lender be. You will use all $100,000 of your own money to buy this house. So the equity investment for you, sir, is going to be $100,000. So the debt component is going to be zero, and you could have borrowed at 6%, and a year later you were planning to sell this house, and but so you will pay no interest charge at all for 6% money, and so you believe 1 year later the price will have appreciated to $110,000. That's your best judgment on the appreciation. And so we'll talk about your gain would obviously be $10,000. And your repayment for the loan, oh, but you didn't get a loan. So there's zero. So obviously, you're going to keep all $10,000. And so your return on equity in this property would be $10,000. Divided by your investment of $100,000, so your ROE is going to be 10%. You've done good for yourself, and now you can leverage and buy a better trailer, one that actually has some aluminum siding on it. But you borrow. Let's say that you borrowed $90,000. So your equity would have been in the house $10,000. Your debt component would have been $90,000. Now, after a year, that interest on that would have been accumulated $5,600. Is that right? For God's sake, $5,400. Will someone please, for God's sake, help? 0.06 times 90,000. Yeah, 5,400. So your interest would have been $5,400. Oops. Now the price 1 year later, you are figuring it'll be $110,000. So the gain is $10,000, but you are going to have to pay back $90,000 and $5,400. You follow me on that? You'll have to pay back the principal and the interest. So that would be $95,400. Okay. So you will get to keep from this, you'll sell the property for $110,000. Yes, and you will pay back to the bank $95,400. So your gain on the property would be, let's see, $14,600. Is that right? Okay. Okay, what was your investment? Your equity investment? What was your equity investment? So your return on equity would be $14,600 divided by $10,000. What is that? Yeah? What is that? What's your return on equity here? Oh, my. It's not quite that magnified, but I'm just kind of overemphasizing the point there. It's not quite that dramatic. But the bottom line is, that the borrowing created leverage. It created a magnification of your return on equity. The more you borrow, the more you borrow as a percent, the greater that magnification is going to be. But there is a price that you pay for it. Because you see, if that house, this guy, if the house had gone up in value or down in value, the worst he would have lost is his investment. Whatever. But with you, if that house had fluctuated by more, on the downside, by more than about $5,400, well, by even a small amount, let me put it that way, you would have been in default. You would have been taken to court. Your credit would have been ruined. You see, because you took risk that you didn't take. And the fact that you did take that risk means that you expect a higher return, obviously. But again, that is at the price of bearing a risk. Because if the cash, if that house had not gone up, in fact gone down, by not too much, you would have been unable to pay off your equity, your debt, and the interest that was due on the debt. That house had fallen by $5,000. You would have lost. You would have been in default. If his house falls in price, his trailer falls in price, he's just lost his equity investment. He'll bitch about it. He'll cry. He'll be on the street, a sad, lonely man. And his wife will leave him for the assistant manager at the Jiffy Lube. But you won't end up in court. You won't be in legal jeopardy because of what you did. You would be, okay? That's the whole point. There are several lessons here. First of all, leverage good because it magnifies ROE. Leverage bad because it constructs risk. And so it's a choice that every corporation must make. Should there be debt in the portfolio on the balance sheet? And if so, how much? Because as you put debt into the corporation, you are going to magnify the equity investor's return, all other things being equal. But it's not magnifying their actual return, it's magnifying their expected return. So by taking on debt, you are giving your equity investors the opportunity to make more money as a percentage, but you are doing that at the price of putting your equity investors at risk in so doing. That's why it's a balancing act. Some corporations choose to have very low debt-to-total asset ratios. Other corporations, literally, especially in my day, when I was doing consulting, you saw corporations that were moving toward almost pure debt. So essentially, the few equity investors there were had enormously magnified expectations, return expectations. It's just, again, a choice. And when you look at corporations, by seeing what kind of debt structure they have, what their overall capital structure is, you get a sense of the philosophy of the company. And you want to ignore, to some extent, the investment analysts who say, well, they don't have enough debt in their portfolio. They could enhance their return on equity by taking on more debt. That's a choice that the executive management is making, that they are choosing to put their investors in a lower risk category. Some investors love risk. They go for it. They chew it up. They look for the riskiest investments there are. Other investors don't want that. So essentially, by choosing your debt to total asset ratio, to some extent, top level management is making a decision about what kind of investors they prefer as far as equity goes. That having been said, let me take on where are those sheets, the Apple sheets? Are they still floating around somewhere? Are there any left, for God's sake? Oh, thank you. Did you get? Okay. Here you go. Let me give out I feel like I'm handing out candy here. Does anyone else need one up in the aisles anywhere? Okay. Now, over here, oh God. I looked at it just before class. Let me write this down. I think I got this right. The price of Apple common stock, I believe, was $283.24 right before I came to class. I think that was what it was. I'm writing that number on the board just because I'll use that in just a little bit here. But now, when I give you 5 years of financial statements, ideally, you would want to construct 5 years of financial ratios. But that is an awful lot like work. That's why we invented spreadsheets, starting with Lotus 1-2-3 and now with Excel and those kinds of things, so that we don't have to do this mess all the time. However, it doesn't hurt to go through and do a couple of ratios here. And for the purposes of what I want to do here, I encourage you, and I'm asking you actually, to verify numbers I brought down, because I just brought the Apple up myself so that I could do this more on the fly. And I constructed its financials, 5-year financials. First things first, let me talk about profitability. Profitability ratios. Gross margin, net margin. And let's look at 07, 08, and 09. And I know I'm writing these in the opposite order, column-wise, as you're seeing them financially reported there. But as far as profitability goes, oh, I also want to do ROA and ROE. With Apple Corporation. Now, if you'll recall, gross profit margin would be gross profit divided by sales, profit divided by sales. So if I were to do Apple for 2007, I would take the 8,152, and I would divide that by 24,578. Now, verify for me, what is the number that you get for that? Talk to me. And that's for 2007. What's your gross margin for 2007? While you're doing that, let me do the other ones. Okay, what do you get for 2007 on it? And I'm waiting for an answer because I want you to say the number to me so I can bring up something about it. What do you get for 2007 gross margin? 33.17%. And you answered my question. It is a percent. And again, I emphasize this. If you give me the wrong units for an answer, you get the answer wrong. You don't get the right answer, give me an answer that I want. It is, and also two decimal places as a percent. So it's 33.17% on that one. For 2008, what do you get? Just call it out. What is? What is it? What? 20%. And the reason I'm having you do this now is because on Wednesday, you have a quiz. You'll have to hammer numbers fast. That's how you do it, because you want to get through the numerical part so you can get to the analytic part. And then for 2009, what was it? 40.14%. Before we go on, what do you see? Just tell me, what do you see, the obvious? Gross margin is good or bad? Don't be afraid. It looks good, right? Gross margin does look pretty good. In other words, it is, and I'm using the term, it is leveraging its costs much more effectively into sales, the cost of sales into sales. Now, net margin, blowing through the net margins for 7, 8, and 9. 34.95 divided by 24.578. And then 6.119 divided by 37.491. And then for 2008, 8235 divided by 42905. Okay, what do you get? 2007. What did you call out? 14.22, thank you. What is that? Is that a times, a percent? Percent, yes. And then for 2008, what do you get? 0.32. And then finally for 2008, I'll put that one down, 19.19. Again, what do you see? What is it you see? Good or bad? Yes, it is good. That doesn't mean that the whole universe is good. It just means that Apple is doing good. And also, it appears that there was a comprehensive leveraging of expenses. Not only were they being more cost effective at the level of cost directly associated with sales, but they were also maintaining that effectiveness with respect to their costs that were not directly associated with sales. I am a little amazed. Well, no, I'm not. Those numbers are moving smoothly together. That's almost creepy. Actually, and I'm going to be honest with you, Apple's not one of my favorites as far as investment analysis goes. That doesn't mean it's not a good company. It's just not one that I typically look at. And that's why I chose it today, is I've tried to go after one that I'm not familiar with so that I am showing you how we think as we create these. Now, ROA, return on assets. Return on assets is net income divided by total assets. Net income divided by total assets. So that means you got to look at both sides of this, the income statement and the balance sheet. In 2007, net income was $34.95. And the total assets, if you flip over, you will see the total assets were $25,347. Survey says, what was your ROA in 2007? 13.79%. Round these, by the way. Round them properly. If it's five or above on the third decimal place, the second decimal place goes up. Otherwise, it goes down. 2008, net income, 6119 against total assets, 36171. 6119 divided by 36,171. What do you get? 16.92%, yeah. And then we'll see that the 2009, 8,235 divided by total assets of 47,501 is 17.34%. Oh, isn't that interesting? What am I seeing there that caught my attention? What do you see? Go. Bingo. That's interesting. Do you see it? Notice that you got gross net jumping like jumping really good, and you got ROA jumped nicely 07 to 08, but it barely jumped in 09. Now, is that bad? It might be that they're building their asset base. Now, why would they be building their asset base? You're all connected to of to what was the big thing that showed up? Oh, you've got to be connected. What's Apple just done last few months? The iPad, yes. Could it possibly be that this was where they were building infrastructure for this very new dramatic project? It could be, Wabbit. Don't know. It's not bad, it's not good, it's just something that catches your attention. It's part of a matrix of things that you have to look at. Now, ROE. And here we're going to do the net income divided by the common equity. So for 2007, ROE is going to be 3,495 divided by, now you go down here to the total equity, 14,532. And what do you get for ROE? 24.05. And then for 2008, 6,119 divided by total equity of 22,297, and you'll get 27.44%. I strongly recommend that you do these so that you know what's happening. It's going to help a lot if you know how to do this before you step into a test on Thursday, quiz on Thursday. And then my net on 2009 is 82,35 divided by 31,640. What is it? 26.03. You're right. Oh, a slight disturbance in the force of Apple. See something interesting? Now, is that a significant thing that happened there? A little bit of a concern. We'll have to look at some other things, see what's going on, what's really going on there. But that caught my attention. That would catch my attention. Got all these numbers moving up. ROA lost its steam, but still managed to increase. But ROE actually got a little bit of a potty training lesson there in 2009. It took a little bit of a hit. Now, what would that be about? I don't know. But it would be of a little concern to me. It might be something that I would ask more about. Why did we lose some of our return on equity from 08 to 09. We'll look at other things here now just to see. Liquidity ratios. Now, liquidity ratios in a company like Apple, I'm not going to be hugely interested in whether the company is going to survive or not. I'm going to do the current, the acid, and I'll see if I can pull the burn. 07, 08, and 09. Now the current ratio. It's current assets divided by current liabilities. So for 07, you've got $21,956, and I'm going to divide the current, that number by 9,280. What do I get? Survey says. Talk to me. Divided by 2007 for the current ratio? What was it? 2.37. 2.37. Now tell me what I write there. What's the symbol beside that? A times. In other words, the current assets can cover the current liabilities 2.37 times over. That's why you'll hear me sometimes call this a coverage ratio. You'll hear me use a term like, well, these liquidity ratios, I might refer to them as coverage ratios. Now for the acid test. The acid test is going to take out my inventory. I'm going to take out my total inventory just to save myself some pain. So for the numerator, I'm going to do, for 2007, the current assets, $21,956, less total inventory of $346. And that gives me $21,610, dividing that by the total liabilities of total current liabilities of $9,280. I get a very modest difference of 2.33 times. On 2007. And now I'm going to do, And now I'm going to do the burn test, which is where I'm going to take just cash and short-term investments, my total short-term investments. I'm going to do my cash and my short-term investments. I'll do it with cash and short-term investments only, which is the first top line there, 15,386. And I'll divide that by my current liabilities for 2007 of 9,280. And I'm going to get, and I'll tell you this one, 1.56 times. That's 2007. Current, 2.37. Acid, 2.33, and burn, 1.56. I was just testing your ass. That was 1.66, yes. I transposed those numbers. That's why I want you to do this with me, because I suck so much at... Anyway, so now for the next one... 2008, I'm going to take 22,111 as the numerator for the burn. Current. I haven't done the current for. Okay, current ratio. $30,006 divided by 11361, 2.64. Then the acid, which is where I'll take that same current, total current assets, 30,006, and then I'm going to take out total inventory of 509 to get 29,497, and then I will divide that by my current liabilities, 11,361, and I'll get 2.60. Here's the interesting one is when you get down to the burn, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to take 22,111 divided by current liabilities, 11,361. And I get 1.95. And I'll resist talking about what I'm seeing there until I get the last numbers in. Now the last 2009, 555 divided by 11506, 2.74 times. Acid on 2009, I'm going to take 31,555 less total inventory of 455 to get 31,100. And then I'm going to divide that in by current liabilities of 11,506 to get 2.70 times. And now for the burn. And I'm predicting, and I'll bet I might be wrong, but I am guessing that this company is going cash flush, 464 divided by current liabilities, 11,506, 2.03, I'm right, 2.04 times. This company's going cash. Do you see it? Look at the ratios. This is why we do this. This is why we go through the pain in the ass of sometimes manually doing this and not doing it with Excel, is because we see the numbers shaping and forming and flowing. Look what's happening to Apple. What do you see? What do you see?
As a year's
we've come to a close, yeah.
They have more cash to cover.
They're going. Did you hear the term that I said a few minutes just before I did that last calculation? I said the company's going cash flush. That's what I would say. I would describe this company for some reason is moving toward cash. Now, what's the problem with moving toward? Well, I got to be careful about this. Would you speculate? Now, obviously, as you go toward cash, they are becoming. Their coverage ratios, all of them are going up. This company is not going to go default on anything current, but it's going towards cash, more and more cash. Now, that's the thing is, okay, let's try this. You look like a wealthy man. How much money do you have in your pocket right now? Okay, fine. I'll get someone else to buy pizza tonight. But okay, suppose that you keep your whole paycheck in your pocket. That's what I do. I come from the old days. Keep my whole paycheck in my pocket. I've always got money for the immediate need. I mean, it's money in case there's a great deal at Walmart. It's money if there is some guy selling quality watches from his trench coat on a corner. It's money if I actually find a girl who says she'd like to be my friend. Shut up. But what is the price of keeping money in your pocket? Is there a cost to it? What would be the cost? Yeah, go ahead.
The interest could be made.
Yes. What do we call that? What kind of a cost is that? Oh, I love it when you talk dirty like that. Yes, it's opportunity cost. Do you see what's happening with this company? Yes, it is getting safer, but that safety has a price. That price is the opportunity cost of foregone yield on investments that it could make with that money in longer term profile. In other words, money that for some reason, interestingly enough, this company is getting more cash flush, which of course is going to mean that it is not making money on long-term investments. But who is it making money for? Who does the company make money for in the end? Yes. No, someone said the government. No, for the shareholders. Oh, well, spank me, Jesus. You see what happened over there? Company is getting safer, but that is also seems to be, perhaps partially having an impact on what the return to the equity holders is. You see now I'm not saying that would be a direct connection, but that's the things that you start to think about. Okay, this company is becoming safer, more cash flush, tilting towards the ability to cover its short-term liabilities with its short-term assets more and more. But I see that there is a problem that I might want to bring up in investment recommendations. That safety will come at the price of return to the investors. So as a company gets away from risk, it gives up return. It gives up return. Isn't that interesting? I think I've mentioned something about risk and return before in this class. Now let's go to debt management ratios. Debt to total assets. '07, '08, and '09. Debt to total assets. Fortunately, this company is not going to be much of a pain in the ass to us. What's the number for debt to total assets for all 3 years? Come on, what is it? You see it? What's the debt to total asset ratio for all 3 years, 2007, 2008, and 2009? Waiting for an answer. Zero. This company is unleveraged. Isn't that interesting? You see that? What does that mean? Is that a bad thing or a good thing? Tell me. Not letting you off the hook. Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
It just depends on the philosophy.
Very good. Very good. You repeated what I said, so that means that you are an incredible intellectual colossus. Okay. This company does not use debt. It doesn't have any debt in its portfolio, which means that ROE doesn't suck, considering this company doesn't realize any gains to leverage. It's delivering that kind of a return on equity. Wow, that's downright troubling and un-American not to have any debt in your portfolio. The hell with that. Times interest earned. What's its interest expense? What's its interest expense? Zero. So its times interest earned is infinity. It can cover its interest expense an infinite number of times over. Interesting again. There, look at that. That's not terribly uncommon, but it's certainly not the norm. This company does not have any debt, so debt to total assets is zero, so it can cover its interest payments an infinite number of times over. It's an interesting situation there. Yeah. Yeah, I did in this case. Sometimes you'll see that a company has tilted its debt up to the short. So, and it's got massive amounts of it in the short. I've seen that. But so you'll have to look up there to make sure that the company isn't leveraging itself with short debt. In this case, this cat is not leveraging itself with any kind of debt. It's just not there, which is, like I said, downright un-American if you ask me. Okay, asset activity ratios, and I'm not going to do average collection period, but I do want to do inventory turnover. Inventory turnover. '07, '08, '09, and if you look at the inventory turnover ratios for all those, I'm sorry, that's sales over inventory. Yeah. Yeah, let me not be circumspect about that. I kind of blabbed on about that a little bit last time, but let me be specific. I got caught with Amazon.com last year because I had done the calculations, and that's why I bitch about it so much, because I forgot my old rules about it, because Amazon had, I think they had nothing in the long, and I was getting these debt-to-total asset ratios of zero, and then I went back and I thought, well, fail. All of a sudden, in the last year of last year of financials, there was all this short-term debt just popping up out of nowhere, and I had not caught it. So I emphasize that more now. Make sure you watch for some short in there, because the company could just be using short as its sole means of financing debt. For one thing, short's fairly easy to get, and I shouldn't say that, but I'll let that go. But let me do the total the inventory turnover ratio here, which is sales over inventory. Sales over inventory, and I would do for 2007, 24,578, and I would divide that by their inventory, which was total inventory was 346. And you get a 71.03. Now, what do I write there? Is that a percent or what? That's an X, yes, that's an X, that's times. Now, 2008, I will get the sales of 37,491 divided by inventory, total inventory of 509, 73.66 times, and then 2009, I'm going to go with sales of 42,905 generated from inventory of 455. Skyrockets, 94.30 times. Okay, now here's the pain in the ass part of it. As I have mentioned, I think, on an exam, I will ask you for short essay answers. Your answer can't be more than one sentence, and it can't be a run-on sentence. Lord knows I've had students who use so many commas. And you do remember what the price of writing too much on one of my answers is, right? I have a bullshit stamp. Don't make me re-ink that thing again. I just did. I want you to tell me, sir, in one sentence, tell me, what are you seeing there in that inventory turnover ratio year over year? And you start with this company.
This company's
working boy. Go ahead.
Turnover ratio goes up. That.
Someone give him a cookie. A little more depth.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
They are turning
their inventory over at a faster and faster rate year over year. That's better. Now, I'm going to beat up on you a little bit. What does that mean? Good. It looks as if, do you remember the term that I use for that kind of inventory management? Yes, just in time. It would appear that they are moving toward an inventory management scheme that it's almost like just in time, or that at least they are not keeping inventory in stock to any greater extent than they have to. What is the danger of that? Can you tell me what would be the danger of that kind of an inventory management system where you lean out your inventory? Obviously, you are not having money sitting on the shelves waiting to be turned into sales. You see that? That's the good part. You're not having money sitting on the shelves in inventory waiting to be sold, waiting to turn into money. There's a downside to it, though. What's the downside? And what that's right. That's right. Would you give that a name? Yeah, you're absolutely right. What would you? Back order, shortage, bottleneck. This company sucks because I can't get my iPad. Yeah, those kinds of terms. Exactly. That's what the downside of this is. When you look at those numbers, yeah, that's wonderful. They're burning their inventory through. It's just coming in and going right out the door. Sort of like eating White Castles, too many of them, or too much vodka with Tabasco sauce in it. But you wouldn't know about that. You're a little too young. Anyway, where the hell was I? Oh, but the dark side is the bottleneck, the back order, the wait, where's the iPads that Best Buy ordered? They said they'd be in stock. Now Best Buy said we'd have them, and now they look sucky, and now the Best Buy's mad at Apple. That's not true, but the point there is that there is that downside. And I want to emphasize, that's what we do in this. As much as calculating these ratios, there's something about getting the numbers and then being able to say, I can see sides to this. I can see an upside and a downside. And that way, I'm not just effusively praising Apple. I can also caution investors saying, I see the good side, but let me tell you about this on the dark side. And then you work with me as an investor and an investment analyst so that we can formulate what would be an appropriate response for you in terms of buy, hold, or sell on the security. Wait. Oh, I almost coughed up a tumor there. Good. Okay. Sales to total assets. Oh, well.
Total asset turnover. And that's sales over total assets. Sales over total assets.
And I'm going to beat through those. Sales over total assets. And please go with me in case I make a dramatic fail mistake. Sales for 2007 would be 24,578. And I'm going to divide that by the total assets on this corporation, 25,347. And that's... Wait, what? $24,578. Holy shit. Okay.
Now, sales to total assets. Is that going to be a times or a percentage? It's a times. 0.97 times in 2007. In 2008, God, I love doing these on the fly, 37,491. 491 divided by the total assets, 36,171, 1.04 times. And then finally, the total equity, I'm sorry, the 2009 for that would be sales of 42,905 divided by, and I'm loving this number. You got to be joking. 0.90, is that right? Oh, that is rather disturbing, rather fluctuating. What would be the best explanation of what happened in 2009? What would be the best explanation? Say it. I'm going to have to check something here. 11. Your total assets are going up hard. Yeah. But notice, do you see how their total assets are rising year over year? But the rise from 08 to 09 as a percentage really isn't as much as it was from 07 to 08. 07 to 08, total assets jumped about, a little less than 11,000 off a base of 25. 08 to 09, they jumped another 11,000, but from a base of 36. So that means that as a percentage, the total assets didn't go up as much from 08 to 09 as they did in 07 to 08. And yet, their asset turnover ratio dropped. So their assets are not generating sales as strongly as they were before. Do you see how they came from 07 to 08, that essentially a buck of assets was turned into a buck of sales? By 08, a buck of assets was turned into a buck four of sales. But by 09, 90 cents, a buck of assets was generating only 90 cents of sales. So their assets are not working as hard, considering that the growth rate of their asset base actually slowed a little bit from 08 to 09 vis-a-vis 07 to 08. Now, the way I'm talking here, by the way, if you're not, I wouldn't expect you to see all this and say all this, but I'm just showing you how we do this and what it means to be a financial analyst. Yeah, go. That's right. That's what I am seeing, is that it might be just one of those things where it's taking a couple of years to get those long-term investments to shake up and get moving for them. You know, that happens. If I jump my assets, they certainly, it's going to take more than a little bit of time to get those up to full efficiency in generating sales. My argument would be, why was it so hard for them to do it 08 to 09 when they seem to have been moving forward 07 to 08? I don't know. But I strongly suspect it was something to do with gearing up for this massive new project with the iPads. I strongly suspect that. I can't say it for sure, though. Okay, now I'm going to drop off that. I want to bring up one called PDE ratio. Now, earnings per share, I've mentioned that before, but I want to bring up the price-to-earnings ratio. Price-earnings is essentially just a, well, let me do it. Okay, and I'm just going to do it for 2009. Okay, 2009, my P-E ratio. Where the hell are my earnings on this? Okay, my earnings per share were 9.08. Okay?
The price to earnings is the price per share divided by the earnings per share. And here, there's no difference between, really, no material difference between undiluted and fully diluted. So I'm going to take the price per share, and I'll take the price right here, which is kind of a fail way to do it, but it's all I've got, divided by, what was that, $9.08 per share earnings, was that right? At 2009? Okay, so I'm just going to do that one. And this number, you'd obviously want to do this with a little more current earnings per share, maybe the quarterly or something like that. But I'm just going to do this so that I can make a point here. $283.24 is the current stock price divided by 9.08. Comes out to be 31.19. And that's a times. Now let me explain what that means. Investors, the market, the equity markets, the global equity markets, where investors buy and sell stock and form the prices minute to minute, have determined that an equity investor should pay $31.19 for every $1 of earnings per share the company generated at the fiscal and year-end 2009. Now, let me say that again. This company right now, if you bought a share of Apple, you would be paying $31.19 for every dollar you as a shareholder may claim on that corporation. Earnings per share tells you on a per share basis the value of your residual claim on that year's income. Okay? So 9.08 is your claim per share as a shareholder. $9.08. They paid their bills, their debts are paid in a timely manner, and as the residual claimant to the cash flow, you get $9.08 of claim. That doesn't mean you're going to get $9.08. That means that in theory, legally, in a quasi-legal sense, you claim $9.08 because everyone before you has been taken care of in terms of the money that they are owed. So, if you are paying $283.24 per share of this stock, it means that you are actually paying $31.14 for every $1 that you may legally claim of that corporation's earnings last year. Now, that in our day, in my day, we were talking about very high PE ratios of 10, 15. At the worst of it, you saw PE ratios in the 70-100 times range. In Japan, I think the record was some, I can't remember what it was. It was some insane PE ratio that was like in the 10,000 times. But here, 31.19 is high enough to say that is a lot of money you're paying per dollar of residual claim. You're not even going to get that money. Not right away. You are simply betting, by buying the stock at $283.24, that every dollar that company makes at the shareholder claim line, the company will be able to generate in as a present value of future claims $31.19 of claims for you in the future. That is risky.
That's a lot of risk. Hell, if I were told a horse bet like that, I'd say, I will not do that bet. That's a long shot. But in the stock market these days, I mean, that's not all that much of a long shot anymore. But it is interesting that if you look at this number, 31.19, and you compare it over here to this company's cash management policy, its debt policy, all those things, in my judgment, there's almost like, I need to think about what's going on here. What in the hell is going on here? You've got a company with a PE ratio that's indicating risk, but you've got, the company doesn't use leverage. The company is flush with cash, and it's getting more flush with cash.
I want to bring up one last thing for you here, if I can find it here. It's one of those things that I wanted to bring up last time, and I did not. And if I can't find it, I'm going to have mud on my face for this, because I wanted to show you one last thing here. Well, I'm going to have mud on my face, I'll bet, because I can't find my damn sheet that I wrote it on. DuPont. Nope. I'm not going to see it here. Come on. Really? Fail. Well, I tried to, by the way, put up that Excel spreadsheet, and it's just not, most people aren't able to get it. But I will put up one last ratio set called a DuPont ratio analysis on this company. I'll do that tonight. And then on Thursday, we will have a bit of a lecture, and then you'll have a surprise quiz, and it will be on ratios. Now, this evening, starting at about 6 on the second floor, we're having a Financial Management Association meeting, and you'll see me there, so you can actually try to be friendly with me, and I'll bite your head off. And then at 7, the meeting begins, but at 6, I think it's about 6 o'clock on the second floor, there's pizza to join or look into the Financial Management Association. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.